time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into the Batter Up podcast, a 92.9 The Game exclusive. Well, I'm Caleb Johnson here with Joe Patrick.
You're not our former, not our former friend, but our former host, Will Palacic.
Former friend, wow.
I said not. I was tripping over my own words there.
Through
Welcome
Will
to the big
right,
leagues, Caleb.
I was about to say, threw Will right under the bus, and we just, you know, hit things off like we never missed him. But no, we really do. Our buddy Will Palacic, who is normally hosting the Batter Up podcast, has moved on to Charlotte, where he's doing big, great things out there in the you know, radio world, sports radio world. So definitely wanted to give a shout out to him that we do miss him, but we are going to, you know, kind of continue on.
The show must go on. We'll be here, every Monday from now until eternity.
Yeah.
Until we're in our coffins. No, we'll be here every Monday live on Facebook. You can check us out. And of course, you can download the show on iTunes, find us on radio.com app, that kind of thing. But we'll be here every week from now on.
Yeah. If you're catching us on Facebook Live, we're hoping to be around this 3 o'clock mark, a little late today, but, you know, I'll blame it on Joe.
No, it was my fault. It was definitely my fault.
So some consistency, you'll know where to catch us. If you're listening to us on the podcast, of course, you know, whenever your leisure time of when you want to pick things up, we are going to be talking Braves baseball, hopefully up until a World Series berth. Let me just go ahead and sprinkle that one out there. We'll put some optimism out into the world that things are ready to go with the Batter Up podcast. Joe, we got things started already this week with spring training game. Are you ready for the overreaction headlines of what to expect for this Braves season?
I tweeted yesterday, I was like watching the game, and it was just like, I'm just like watching my box score update every 30 seconds on my phone. That was like basically how I was taking the game in.
Yes. It was weird that there's no TV broadcast that we could catch this game, at least, I don't know, get an idea of what was going on as the Braves played the Rays, you know, the defending, what are they?
The AL pennant winners. Is that the pennant?
Yeah, they made it. They, you know, golf clap to them that they made it to the World Series, only to be kind of run through by the juggernaut Dodgers. And so it was just one of those, I can't even say it was good to see them because we couldn't see them. You could listen to the call. But then today we actually got some baseball, and it's actually going on as we speak. The Braves are playing the Red Sox. Looks like Atlanta is up 4-2 if you care about those non-important sorts of things. So, Joe, What are you ready to overreact to?
Yeah, yesterday, it's so funny. Yesterday, of course, you have the first spring training game. Then it's like, you know, for me as the Braves reporter, it's like you feel some sort of pressure, not pressure, but just like, you know, you start getting producers requesting you to be on the show to talk about the game and like all the, you know, well, I recalled back to last year. It was like Tuki Toussaint, I think, struck out the side in the first inning. Like he started the first game of spring training, and I think he had like 3 strikeouts. I guess this would have been 2019, not last year's spring training. Okay. And everybody was going wild about it. And it's just like, okay. And it doesn't matter at all. So I'm more still just thinking about stuff that's happened over the off season, that kind of thing. It's really hard to put much stock of any into what we've seen in one game of spring training, especially the first game of spring training when, you know, you've got pass balls because the pitcher and catcher are not on the same page with signs and things like that. So that's literally the stage that we're dealing with right now.
So you're not ready to overreact to the fact that Kyle Wright looked a little shaky in his first appearance since the postseason, no?
I'm not too worried. I don't even know if I'm a little worried. No, it's just like, it's funny, like Sean Newcomb, again, I wasn't able to watch, but apparently people were saying that Snitker looked very upset with Sean Newcomb, that he was looking very frustrated with his outing. And then after the game, we were talking to Snit, and he seemed like really pleased with Sean Newcomb. And he was like, no, like he hasn't been pitching in a while in this kind of atmosphere. It's going to take him a while to get back. Cause you know, he was basically at the training site. He wasn't even playing minor league baseball, obviously, last year. So, it's like everybody reads into everything at this point. So just trying to keep it even keel.
Freddie Freeman has just barely joined the team at this point.
Yep.
He's just made it to Florida where he can, I saw a photo of him. I think it was four generations of Freemans that were there after Freddie and his wife just had a couple of kids here in the last month or so. So he's, you know, I guess a new parent again, dealing with those sorts of things. But yeah, I think the general idea is nothing to overreact to. We're still very new into things. We're still so new into spring training that, as I was mentioning to you before we got on here, that the spring training is in a form where you can just call the end to an inning. And just after 20 pitches, you can, as a manager, look over the umpire and say, yeah, we're done with this one. I think earlier today, yeah, right. Just since we're making up rules, let's just throw them in here. I think through March 14th, if I remember, I think that's the date that they put on there, where after you've had a pitcher throw 20 pitches, you can pull them and just end the inning. I think the Braves had the bases loaded in the first or second. And of course, Boston was like, yeah, our guy's throwing 22. We're done with things and just move on. I do want to kind of abruptly, I guess, transition into, we got to talk about this offseason and what we've seen. I feel like everyone on our airwaves at 92.9 has kind of had the opportunity to dissect and look at the offseason. Now's our chance. I guess, Joe, I'll just toss it to you as to where you want to start with what you want to break down and what happened this offseason.
I mean, I thought it was a good offseason just to kind of, we can take a little chronological recap. It was kind of funny that the Braves were pretty much the most active team in like that first week of free agency with signing Charlie Morton and Drew Smyly, those two starting pitchers, two decent to high quality starting pitchers as well. Obviously, I think people are a little shaky with Charlie Morton just purely based on Cole Hamels, somebody who has nothing to do with Charlie Morton, but just because they kind of occupy that similar kind of pitching profile on the roster as the older veteran who can give you, you know, quality innings, that kind of thing. I think people are a little worried just because of how that all went down last year. But I think that Charlie Morton signing him to the 1-year deal is a great deal. And Alex Anthopoulos, as I've kind of talked to you about this, Alex Anthopoulos convinced me that Drew Smyly, there's a lot of potential there. He's a guy who was coming off of Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago. And it always takes guys at least like a season to kind of really get the control back. The velocity comes back pretty soon, but then it's the, you know, gaining that command. And it seems like Drew Smyly has that. Apparently he was like one of the best pitchers in all of baseball that last month of the season last year, just by the numbers. So I think that was a good deal. But then it was like the driest period of news I've ever seen with the Braves ever. Like, because for obvious reasons, you're dealing with COVID stuff. You're dealing with just generally a slow market. And all the while, they just have this huge gap in left field where Marcell Ozuna played last year, or I guess he was the DH, but you know, this year they needed that left fielder and they finally got that deal done, which I think was huge. It was increasingly becoming more apparent that he had to be the guy as other players did start to sign with teams. George Springer went off the board. Michael Brantley went off the board. I'm just trying to think of other players who were kind of tentatively linked to the Braves in any way. And Marcell Ozuna was the one there and they got a great deal for him. So it's really, I think it's been a great offseason for the Braves because there wasn't a whole lot of like holes that needed to be filled other than, you know, just getting him back and then shoring up that rotation. So I'm going to just step out there and give it a grade. And I'm interested to hear what your grade for the Braves offseason might be. I'm giving it an A-. I'm giving it an A- based on just the needs and the, you know, what they realistically were able to achieve with the kind of money that they have.
All right. First off, I let this stand on our rundown sheet and didn't make any sort of comment towards things, I absolutely cannot stand grades. Now, we're grades. Going to do it. Oh, see, I despise them because, I mean, you're just, you know, just the skeptic in me realizes that you're just throwing out something that, you know, just, I don't know, it's random. It's, I guess it's one of those things that it's highly debatable. And this is a perfect example of that where, yeah, you want to get into, you know, people who have left. You got Melanson, he goes to San Diego. Duvall, he leaves, goes down to Miami. Cole Hamels, thank goodness, he is no longer a part of this franchise. I did tell you that I went to, the Braves did a spring cleaning, I guess, where they were trying to get out their old inventory.
Yeah.
And I ran across like three racks of Cole Hamels jerseys. And I just got a really good laugh out of things because I, much like someone that we work with and Brian Gebhardt, I was never a fan of Hamels even before he came to the Braves. And then when he came to the Braves, obviously just completely soured my opinion of how he handled himself. But that's gone and in the past. Bringing in Morton, I like that move. You need a veteran. This pitching staff needs a veteran. Charlie Morton coming in here, giving him, you know, $15 million, whatever it was for the 1 year, knowing he is on his way out. I think, and I may have even said this because I think we had enough time. We did a batter up like right towards the end of the season.
That's right. Yeah,
and we did. And I do think at that point Morton had been signed by the Braves, and I still stand by. I think what I kind of alluded to then, which was, as much as you have pitching coaches, you have, you know, guys to develop this talent, there's just something about having that guy sitting next to you in the bullpen or sitting next to you during spring who can just break down and give you little pointers, whether it's Max Fried, you know, no matter who it is. It's just, there's something important about having that guy there who can kind of guide you along the way. And I think Morton does that. I'm still not sold on Drew Smyly, but we'll get in, you know, it's one of those. We'll see once we get to the season. Obviously, with the National League not bringing back the designated hitter, that's one of those that hurt to see, you know, Ozuna comes back. Yay, we're excited. I'm not gonna go, you know, ecstatic over it just because I know that he's going to have to play in the field. And I do think sometimes we have overreacted in the past to Ozuna's play in left field. I'm still not excited about the fact that he's going to be out there, but he is a solid offensive piece. I guess newer pieces, Jake Lamb comes in, shores up a little bit of the bench. Jason Kipnis obviously coming on a minor league deal, kind of another piece that you assume is going to be on this bench. If I have to give out a grade, I will be optimistic in that I will put it B, just a B, not
I'll
a
take
B
it.
Plus, not a B minus, just a B.
You're giving them the not the on the A to F scale, but did you ever have report cards in elementary school where you get an S or a U, yeah, or an N or something like that? You get the, yeah, you're giving them the S. Satisfactory offseason. I'll take it. We'll see. I mean, obviously, you don't know exactly how these guys are going to turn out based on projections or whatnot, but I think at the end of the day, the Braves are still lined up to be the favorite in this division. And you know, I think that they have.
You're sold on that.
I think they should be. I know that people disagree with that, but I mean, the Braves have been doubted. You know, obviously, nobody expected them to win it in 2018. Nobody thought they were going to win it again in 2019. And then even in 2020, Braves own fans were saying the season was over when Mike Soroka went down with that Achilles injury. And I'm not even going to say they were wrong for saying that kind of thing, for expressing that sentiment. But still, this team just proves time and time again that they're that good, and at some point we got to believe it, you know. So I think that they're the favorites, and coming into the season until another team comes in and kind of stakes that claim.
Yeah, I think what the Mets did was obviously flashier,
mm-hmm.
in a way that maybe they will grab the attention. I do think, I guess when it comes to me grading the Braves and what expectations I have out of them, I don't put it into the division because, in my opinion, who cares if they win the division? I mean, it's nice. It's a nice little border, you know, a nice sign that you get to put up in your stadium. But the Nationals a couple of years ago, they didn't win the division, but they won what was more important. And that's, I feel True. Like that's what I put the emphasis in, and that this is every year I'm going into things going, is this a World Series team? As currently constructed, I am not a believer this is a World Series team.
Wow.
And maybe that's my hot take for the moment. early into the Batter Up podcast, maybe I'll revisit things later on down the road. But yes, as currently constructed, and I want to see Atlanta get to a point where I can believe in that.
Mm. I'm surprised, but I'm glad we kind of have a diversity of opinions here, because I think that makes for a more interesting conversation, because I think that they are more suited to a World Series run this year because of the starting rotation, the fact that Ian Anderson really proved himself to be a pitcher who not only is going to give you consistent performances throughout the year, but I think that he's also proven himself to be a guy who can handle the high stress situations of the playoffs like he did last year. And so I have a ton of confidence in him. Of course, a lot of that rides on Ian Anderson, Max Fried, Mike Soroka getting healthy in one of them's case and staying healthy. But I think that this rotation has a lot of upside, you know, beyond what we've seen so far from these guys in their careers. I still think Max Fried, all these guys, Soroka, I think they can all take steps up and become even better pitchers. They're all very young still. And so I think that I'm banking on that a little bit, both in the rotation and just generally in the lineup. Like I've said, I think Ronald Acuna can still become a better player. And last year we saw like a half Ronald Acuna for almost all of last year because he was dealing with injuries. Same with Ozzie Albies. You know, I just feel like there's a lot of untapped potential still on this Braves roster, which makes me really excited. And I just am looking forward to seeing what they become this year.
Can I be the pessimist and go flip side on you? And this is, and maybe this is just the war-torn Atlanta fan in me that comes out when I see this and I go, okay, last year, sure, you didn't have, you know, what could have been the best run from Ronald Acuna, but you did have an MVP in Freddie Freeman. Is Freddie going to just be right back at that same level that he was? I guess I can say a year ago, but, you know, half a year ago, more like it is what it really seems like. Is he at that level? And then we have this big question mark, which I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to dive into, of what is Mike Soroka going to be after an injury that could be detrimental, but seems like is healing really well. So I get nervous, I think, in that I feel like in specific areas, the Braves have shored things up. I think the rotation heading into this season, even compared to where it was last year, I feel more comfortable, especially with a guy that I'm huge on Ian Anderson. I absolutely love what we saw out of Ian Anderson last year. No matter what we saw out of his final appearance, I really love the confidence, mm-hmm. and you know, just the talent that he brings. But when you start going position by position, do I feel more comfortable with this team than I did a year ago? And I don't know that I'm necessarily sold on that.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some factors that would that make it so that it's not like the exact same team as last year. Like you alluded to, Marcell Ozuna is going to have to play in the outfield as opposed to being a DH. Who knows how that affects the Braves defense overall, you know, in terms of giving up more runs and things like that. And who knows how much that impacts Marcell Ozuna himself in terms of what he provides in the batter's box, because, you know, guys have their routines, and it seemed like he was in a really good routine and, you know, had good flow in that DH spot. So that remains to be seen. You know, I forgot what I was going to say. There was something I was going, you said something that I was going to rebut, and now I can't even remember it. So
did I ramble too long?
No. It was all me. Oh, I remember. So with Freddie Freeman, what's the one thing that happened before he had that monster year last year? He got his elbow cleaned out. And that's the one thing that gives me hope that he could kind of have some similar, be able to repeat that kind of season. And even going back to 2019, I remember he was right up there and as with some of the best stats in baseball until he had a terrible September. In September, he only hit two homers, I think. And it was like September 1st. And it was when that elbow started bothering him. And he was never that same guy all the way through the playoffs. Remember, it was like locking up on him in those playoff games.
It got bad enough that I really don't think they should have played him. But
yeah, I know a lot of people were saying that he shouldn't be playing. So that kind of gives me hope that he can, you know, be that guy. But regardless, Freddie's the one guy where I feel like, you know, okay, you might not be getting MVP quality out of him over the course of a season, but if he's not, you're going to get something pretty, pretty darn close, and a guy that you will always want in the batter's box in any situation. So, but generally I'm just excited about this team. I think what's been exciting also is what's happening around Mike Soroka. Again, going back to last year when he tore that Achilles, it was like doomsday scenario, both for that season, but then also people were, you know, and myself included, was assuming like, oh, shoot, well, he's going to miss at least half the next season. Turns out, you know, these Achilles injuries with the magic of modern medicine, I guess. I don't know how they do it, but apparently they can get these things pretty much 100% healthy in about 5 months. And then at that point, it's just about building up all the other ligaments and things that atrophied when you had the heel immobilized. But it sounds like Mike Soroka is doing really well. And that gives me optimism about this rotation, because it sounds like he may only miss about a month of the season. And if you ask Mike Soroka about it, he seems like he is gung-ho about getting back out there like ASAP. And that is very exciting, because I don't think anybody was expecting that about this time last year.
Yeah, I do think it's strange thinking that we're going into a season where you get to add that arm.
Yeah,
like later into things, you know, I think the lineup as it stands, the rotation as it stands, I feel comfortable with it to start out the season. Where are you more leaning towards seeing Charlie Morton on opening day or getting Max Fried? Or do you care?
I don't really care.
I'm with you.
The opening day thing for me, I know it's like always, it was like a running joke with Julio Teheran and everything. Yeah. It's never been a big thing. I mean, I know it's a notable like achievement, kind of like I don't know what you would call it, just like, you know, a feather in the cap for players and things like that. It's never been a big deal for me. I would think it's going to be Max Fried, but I don't know. Maybe it will be Charlie Morton. I don't know. And yeah, I don't really care that much.
No, I'm with you. I mean, it sets the rotation to an extent. That can't be changed at some point and will once Mike Soroka gets added back into things. I do think one of the things that we got out of Mike Soroka was listening to him last week and him talking about the injury healing. You mentioned this to me off air, and I thought it was worthy of us bringing up, discussing here, that Alex Anthopoulos kind of jumped out to say, oh, you know, we gotta slow Soroka down. He's just, you know, he's such a young pup and ready to go, and we gotta calm him down. And then when Mike got in front of the podium, it kind of seemed like his idea was, no, I'm taking this very seriously, very slowly, and kind of compared his approach to what Kevin Durant did over in the NBA.
Yeah, no, it was interesting, because it was, I didn't love hearing it, because I don't like hearing like a player and a, you know, someone in the front office, the GM, kind of talking differently about these kinds of situations. Like, I don't want there to be discord between the two sides, but
don't want mom and dad to fight.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I think that, you know, it's interesting that Soroka was kind of adamant that he's not pushing it, that he's being safe, all that. but he was still saying like, I can feel my position. I'm going to be doing those drills. He was like saying that he was ready essentially. So on the one hand, yeah, I do believe him, like, especially in the course of the rehab when he was still going through all the physical therapy with regards to the Achilles and everything. I'm sure that he was being very careful with it. But at this point, it does seem to me like he's kind of anxious to get out there and be part of this team during the season as soon as possible. And he said that, you know, it's something we're going to need to talk about. He said that once or twice or maybe even three times. So it sounds like they have not made a decision yet firmly, obviously, at this point as to what they're going to do. But it seems like it's something that Soroka wants to like make sure that they're on the same page on in terms of how much time he needs to rest. Because the thing with the Achilles injury and what Soroka was saying with regards to Durant is, unlike Kevin Durant, who needs to be able to jump off of one foot and dunk a basketball, you know, Mike Soroka doesn't necessarily need that. He needs to be able to pitch and defend himself in the box. And he thinks he can do that, both those things, and obviously field his position to a capable extent right now. And so the decision then becomes, what risk are you taking by holding him out longer? And then what are the costs of holding him out? And I think that the costs are going to be much outweigh the risk, the potential risks. And so that's why you'll probably see him come back sooner rather than later, or at least that's what Mike is going to argue to the front office. No, I don't want to say he's going to argue, but you know, that's what he's going to say when they have these discussions.
Yeah. So another position that may not be shored up or may change within the first month is what we're going to see out of center field. As it stands right now, we ended the 2020 season with Christian Pache playing center field. Are we expecting that to continue, or do we get another season of the Ender Inciarte experiment? That, if you remember at the beginning of 2020, there was a particular guy on this podcast who was very much, I wouldn't say ride or die for Ender Inciarte, but was definitely taking the wait and see approach that maybe a particular guy on this podcast is not willing to do so in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I love Ender Inciarte. Great guy. He's so I cover Atlanta United as well. And it's like, I remember I was at Atlanta United's training ground when Ender Inciarte came and presented Joseph Martinez with the golden boot that he won for scoring the most goals in the game. Yeah, and
I just thought that was so Venezuela. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. They're good buddies. So for that reason, I do love Ender, but this is Christian Pache's job, right? I do think that, you know, we talked about not taking a lot out of these spring training games. I do have an inkling that Brian Snicker starting in Ender Inciarte in that game yesterday, batting lead, I think that was a little, just like a measure of respect. Like, I think that was like setting a little bit of a marker, saying that, like, again, nobody has a starting job at this point right now, but like Ender Inciarte is going to be the guy who needs to be beaten out for the job. It's not the other way around. And I think that that's the right way to handle the situation just from a management perspective. But I just am very confident that Christian Pache is going to prove that over the course of this next coming month, both in the games and then obviously just what they see from them generally.
Yeah, I do have to wonder about whether there's going to be some playing, some tinkering around with service time, and if that's how we end up with Inciarte to start things off, at least. If that is the case, they are going to have to present it in a better way, because we literally just watched the Mariners absolutely, you know, make a fool of themselves with their team president coming right out in the open and talking about service time and how they're, you know, playing with things. And I think we know that teams do this, but it's how it's handled. That I would wonder if, I mean, Inciarte, like you said, he started yesterday. But if Pache ends up having a hot spring towards the end of things, is there going to be any way that they can excuse it? Especially, I think it's more so the case if Pache is, for lack of a better term, if he's serviceable and if Inciarte isn't hitting, which is what was happening back a season ago. I mean, he just wasn't getting hits at all. And you know, I mean, that batting average is plummeting. And is there a point at which you say, service time or not, we've got to do what's best to win. And if this is the move we're going to go to, do it now.
I don't think the Braves will be obsessed with the service time issue. I do think that we could see them exercise that option to have that manipulation. But I only think that happens if Ender and Ciarte is the one who shows that he's hitting the ball really well and the Braves can get by, can do well early in the season with Ender in center field. I think it's more about Ender's performance. Even though I just said, I think, you know, Christian Pache will prove himself to be the center fielder over in Ciarte in spring. Yeah, we hope. I mean, I think we've all seen enough just from Pache in who he is that he will be that guy. But I think that if Ender gets hot, you know, then maybe you see him, you know, carve himself out a little bit more playing time. I just don't see it, though. I mean, I feel like we start to obsess over the situation because every spring training we're looking at, you know, what are the position battles? And then there's like this hyper focus on those players. I don't really see a lot of those this year. And so I think that that's one of the reasons like why we and fans and we're all just like trying to like find something to focus on. But and I understand, obviously, there's like legit conversation to be had around this. I just don't think that it's I just don't think it's that controversial that Christian Pache is going to be the guy that is in center field on opening day.
No, fair enough. I do want to include, Joe, a little bit of our Facebook Live audience. I saw a question that popped up on here earlier that I find slightly comical, also just interesting, something I want to get into that Let's I think is a little bit apart from where we may have gone. There is a deeper discussion to be had, and I know we'll have this in the future, on what position-wise the Braves need to bolster to push and, you know, to be competitive. However, we've got Barney Bailey who wrote in on Facebook Live. What about signing outfielder Yasiel Puig? He said he puts a number on it, $5 million for 1 year. I think that's quite a bit higher than what he was going to get if the Braves had signed him, if he had not contracted COVID-19 back last year. Is Yasiel Puig worth kicking the tires on and bringing in as a bench piece along with some of the other random names that have come in so far?
I can totally see why that would be an interesting option. And if we were playing MLB The Show, I would definitely do that, you know, because it's like, okay, I can have a guy with these ratings, you know, who's got like this kind of batting profile just sitting on my bench and I can just use him as a pinch hitter or whatever, anytime I want. I think that there are some more like personal dynamics with that situation where, you know, Yasiel Puig is a fiery character, and who knows if he would even be interested in signing with the Braves if they're like, hey, come sign with us to be a bench player. That might not be what he wants. So I'm sure it's not what he wants. Granted, he might be running out of options if he's still available at this point. So I just think I wouldn't do it personally. But I totally understand the situation. If you had an injury in the outfield, then that crops up during spring training, then I definitely think that would be an option to look at.
Yeah, I was thinking they claimed Abraham Almonte off waivers last week, kind of brought him in that right field position, or, you know, I guess potentially could be late game replacement, because that will need to be that position will need to be filled, a late inning guy to come in for Ozuna. Who's going to give you, you know, better defense than what you would potentially get?
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that seeing that name revisit Yasiel Puig, who was like so much excitement literally this time a year ago.
We were ecstatic.
Yeah. With him coming in, or maybe it was, I don't know, was it this early or was it back? It was closer to like July, I think.
Yeah, it would have been getting ready. Yeah.
When things were getting ready to go, and it was, you know, that was a name. And then the physical was failed because he contracted the virus, and then we never heard from him again, never discussed him again.
I thought they would go back in for him, but I can't remember what dynamics changed there in the outfield. I think that by the time it came around, like, Atlanta's outfield was looking like it was in better shape at the
Duval was obviously having the season he was having.
That's right.
Until unfortunately things went cold in the playoffs. But yeah, it's just it was one of those interesting names that I had not forgotten about, but just and like pushed back in That's my really mind funny. Of yeah.
Yeah.
Just, like, I want to stay away from. I do kind of think, Joe, is there anything you want to get into before we wrap things up? We are close to the end of time.
There are so many things we can talk about, but we are getting toward the end of our time. I'm kind of glad because it means we'll have more to talk about next week.
Exactly.
We can just push some of these things back because, you know, a lot of this stuff is during spring, there'll be more stuff for us to talk about every day. So,
yeah, we can't overreact to every single game. You know, I mean, the Braves are still winning 4-2 as we speak, in the top of the seventh inning against the Red Sox. You know, so get your pennants ready for the upcoming season.
Oh, by the way, one thing, my dark horse this season, who was the guy who started this game, Waskar Yanoa. I think he's either going to end up playing a role in the rotation that we can't anticipate right now, or he's just going to be a really solid reliever for this team.
Yeah, there are times that you and I vehemently disagree about certain things, and then this is one particular player that I think we discussed this maybe a week or so ago about the fact that even some of our Atlanta media members left Yanoa off what they expect to be the opening day roster, and I was like, absolutely not. Like, it's one of those, it does baffle me that the kid's 22 years old. It just seems so young and has come in what I would consider clutch in big moments for the Braves, especially last year. I thought he played very well and gave, you know, plenty of room for improvement, but plenty to be excited about. That I would completely agree with you. If there was a dark horse pick, that would be a guy. Do you have a guy who maybe we've been, and I hate to be negative, but a guy that maybe we've been hot on that fades to black during this season?
Ooh, fading to black. That is dark. But I would say Max Fried, I think, is due for some regression. You know, he was like a Cy Young candidate last year. I could see him falling back a little bit this year. Not that I really have any reason to expect it, but he's just one of those guys where, you know, you could see things not going as perfectly smooth for him this year. He's dealt with blisters and things, which didn't really crop up as that much of an issue last year. He did have one thing last year. I can't remember what the injury was. I think an ankle that happened like right toward the end. But I guess he would be my one guy. I will say an interesting thing, one more thing with regards to Yanoa that I thought was interesting. Brian Snicker revealed yesterday that they're going to stretch him out this spring as a starter. And if they don't end up needing him, because they want him to be in that competition for potential, you know, I think anticipating that Soroka will not be available for opening day, I think they want to give Yanoa a chance to win that job, along to help, again, push Kyle Wright, these kinds of guys. But if he doesn't win the job, then he said he'll be a guy who could potentially pitch multiple innings for the team out of the bullpen. So just a really versatile piece.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for him. I will steer very quickly back in the negative. Hello, darkness, my old friend. Yeah, you know, that's why I wear black. You know,
that's right.
I'm sorry. It fits the personality. But I will say I'm very, very, very concerned about Chris Martin. I feel I saw someone, and I want to give credit. It may have been Scott Coleman who on Twitter talked about the fact that Chris Martin is a sneeze away from an injury. And I become so concerned about him. What we've seen in the past, you know, those really high moments, but then once again in the playoffs last year, I just really get concerned about his health, especially as he's going to be needed so much more with a guy like Mark Melancon leaving, and, you know, all the others who will have to step up kind of in line, where we still don't know how this bullpen is going to be shored up. But I think, Joe, I think we will leave it there. and try to revisit. Yeah,
we'll talk about the division. We got a lot to talk about with some of these guys. We'll have a lot more looks at some of these pitchers and players by the next time we talk. So there'll be a lot.
I was about to say, part of it too is we do need to see these guys once again, and that will take some time for them to get some real innings and kind of shore up what this roster is going to look like in 2021. We definitely want to thank you all for listening to the Batter Up podcast. Go follow Joe at, was it JAPatrick200?
That's right.
Still haven't changed it. That's fine.
Still haven't. It's my from my Hotmail email domain name.
Ooh.
In like the late 90s.
At least we didn't go all the way to AOL. We stuck with Hotmail. That's fine. But follow Joe at JAPatrick200. You'll follow me at ATLJohnson18. Follow the radio station at 929 The Game. You've been listening to the Batter Up podcast, a 929 The Game exclusive.